Welcome to the Dusha Podcast, the place where we help your business become more purpose-driven, your values turned from words to real actions of your real employees, and your corporate culture not something nice to have, but something functional and really driving your business results. I'm your host, Artem Mushin-Makedonsky, and tonight we have a special guest for you, Joey Ryman, the founder of Bright House Consulting, a company that is focusing solely on finding and articulating the purpose of business. Joey has written the book Story of Purpose and has helped numerous companies find their purpose and lead by their purpose. Joey, it's a pleasure to have you here, and I can't wait to hear your thoughts and your opinions about driving a purposeful business. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. It's an absolute delight to talk to your audience and to talk with you.
Thank you so much. Joey, I would like to go over several questions. Some of them are tricky, some of them are discussive. So let's just dive right in. In Russia, we have the concept of vision, mission, and corporate values, and you are working with purpose. And this whole purpose concept, I've read your book and I know the difference, but I would like you to comment, like, why is purpose so meaningful? Why is it like number one before the mission? Is it number one before the mission? How do they compare?
Yes, it is. And it's a great question. And the question really begs us to understand the differences between a mission, a vision, and a purpose. So right. Let me explain those. A mission is what you do every day. It is basically the directions of your life, lived or every day at the workplace. So it's a big what. A vision, as opposed to a what, is a where. So the vision of a company is where that company is going. And usually that falls into two buckets. It's either financial, so I want to be more financially fit the next year, or it's geographical, which means I want to expand my footprint in the world. So that's a where. However, right. A purpose, as opposed to a what or a where, is a why. And to understand and to feel why I'm doing what I'm doing is what gets us out of bed in the morning. It is what keeps us feeling safe in the evening. The author, Mark Twain, had a beautiful quote, one of my favorite quotes. He said, "The two most important days of your life is the day that you are born and the day you find out why." And I believe that the second piece of that, the day you find out why, is even more important than the day you're born, because you don't remember what you were doing on the day you were born. But to have a why in your life, you can deal with any what, anywhere, any who, anyhow, but the why is what gives us not the directions like a mission does, but the direction in our lives at work.
Wow, that's really powerful. Thank you so much for clarifying it. And Joey, purpose is something really strong and emotional. I mean, that's like the ground. I feel a lot of energies there. And just to clarify, can you give me an example? Maybe you have a favorite purpose of one of your clients who you've been working with in these years.
Absolutely. Well, let me give you the purpose of one of my heroes first, because I think it's the best written purpose that I've ever heard of. And that hero would be Mahatma Gandhi of India. In another book called Thumbs Up, which I wrote a few years ago, the foreword was written by Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi. And I asked Arun, "Did your grandfather have a purpose?" And he actually shared with me his grandfather's purpose, which he had written down as a youngster. And Mahatma Gandhi's purpose was to wipe every tear from every eye, to wipe every tear from every eye. And the beauty of that purpose is that it guided Gandhi, but it's also guiding his children. It guided the country, and it was Almost, well, actually, Arun Gandhi told me it was impossible, but that's part of what a purpose does. It's an aspiration so great that it can last a lifetime. You know, a purpose, as opposed to a mission, it doesn't come and go. Purpose comes and stays. As far as corporate purpose that I've worked on, there are the companies that I've worked on, over 250 companies. Graco Baby Products, the purpose was cradle those who cradle them. Google's purpose was do no evil. The purpose of Salvation Army, one of the greatest companies on the planet, was a one-word purpose, and the purpose was others. So what we find is we find these purpose statements that are not necessarily factual, but they are truths. And that's the beauty of a purpose. It is a truth. It is a timeless truth. And missions and visions actually answer timely needs. So let me just make sure we all understand that again. A purpose is a timeless truth, never changes, but our needs change all the time. So if you put together the purpose of a company with the timely needs of the company or the world, you get at that intersection what Aristotle called vocare. And while I'm on Aristotle, because it's an important point, When Aristotle taught his students, his curriculum was made up in two parts. One was, what are your unique talents and gifts as a human being? That was the first part. That was a two-year study program. And then the next year, those students would identify the needs in the world. And Aristotle said something very important for everyone that is listening. So important. He said, at the intersection of one's distinctive gifts and talents and the needs of the world, there lies your vocare, which is Latin for calling. And what I did 25 years ago is I started a consultancy based on that notion, that we would identify, articulate a company's purpose, and then find the needs in the world that that company could serve, or mitigate the ills of. And what I changed was the word vocare from calling to purpose. And that was the birth of Brighthouse. But that now is the basis and foundation for all companies looking for their purpose.
Wow. Now that is really something. I mean, I now understand how they coincide, and even better. And this example from your book by the grandson of Mahatma is just golden. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah.
Joey, here's what I wanted to ask you. I've been researching into the topic of purpose, mission, why, and I wanted to ask you if your purpose concept is somehow related to the why concept by Simon Sinek. I'm not sure if it was like before or after, or you're like parallel. No. So can you comment on this?
My body of work came 11 years before Simon Sinek's TED Talk. So I don't know Simon personally, but I love the work that he's doing. But it is derivative of the work that I did. And that's the way it ought to be. I mean, everybody's work should be replaced or augmented or plussed or inspired by others. So I'm a big fan of Simon Sinek's. But again, you know, the work that I've done was 12 years earlier.
Wow. Okay. Got it. So I like that you are commenting on this in this way of like the man who is looking for more purposeful people and more purposeful companies and is embracing the followers. So that's just what I thought you would do. And that's great.
Well, that's the, you know, purpose is a generative concept, which is a beautiful notion. And by generative, I mean, it keeps generating outward. Again, missions and visions change, but to be generative is to be a gift that keeps on giving to people. And that's the beauty of purpose. And that's why people who study purpose or are proponents of purpose are very user-friendly to the other colleagues because this is the work. It's a Herculean work that needs many, many supporters and many soldiers.
Wow, that's really what generosity is like. Thank you so much.
Sure.
All right, Joey, let's dive into some numbers for a sec, because I've been to your website for quite a number of times, and in your book, you've also mentioned a lot of studies that are made into the field of how purpose is connected to business results. Because I don't know if it's in states as much as Russia, but in Russia, leaders have a strong desire to feel that, well, if I find the purpose, will it bring me money? So what I see on your website is just, let me just quote something, because that's really fascinating. Purpose have experienced a brand valuation increase of 175% over the past 12 years. And this one more, 9 out of 10 employees would take a pay cut to have more purpose in their work. And this is just gold. For every 10% increase of purposefulness at work, organizations experience 8.1% reduced turnover. I mean, those are really sharp numbers. They are on the point. Can you share some insight, maybe not all of it, but some, how did you measure such ethereal, like some such human traits into those hard data?
Yeah, there's a 2x2 that I created many years ago called the Camelot Matrix, and it puts companies in 4 different quadrants, and it basically measures operational excellence on the x-axis, and on the y-axis it measures soulful excellence, the sister to operational excellence. And soulful excellence is really about the amount of purpose a company has. The operational excellence axes measures performance and efficiency. And what we found was you can't go all the way east or all the way to the right on the x-axis unless you are imbuing the company with a more purposeful with more purpose, that you actually you don't have the graph right in front of you, but you actually are stopped midway on the x-axis. So in order to optimize a company's profit or EBITDA or margins, one needs to employ purpose or it's a dead stop. And that was when I sold my company to the Boston Consulting Group, this was one of the first pieces of analysis that they did. But let me underscore that with another author and another book who I love. The book is called Firms of Endearment by Professor Jag Sheth, Sheth. He's a colleague of mine, and he wrote a book about a decade ago that looked at 3 kinds of companies. One was the S&P 500 company. One was good to great companies, made famous by Jim Collins. And the third were purposeful companies that had a genuine purpose and that had activated its purpose. And here are the numbers, and they're amazing. The first, what he did was he measured profit over a 10-year period. The S&P 500 companies had a profit of all the indices combined of 133% over 10 years. Good to great companies had a 333% increase over 10 years. But the purposeful companies, and get this, had nearly 1,700%. So this was one of the earliest pieces of research and work done, which I adored because it was quantitative analysis to support what a lot of people thought were Joey's fascination with the machinations of mystery, and all of a sudden this fairy tale that I was weaving became factual and became underscored by numbers. And there are many numbers that coming out every day. The latest by Deloitte was that 91% of millennials will switch from one brand to another if they believe the company is demonstrating genuine purpose. So now we're into the world of science and purpose. And then we look at the health, and this is important, especially during this time of this chaos that we're in this health crisis. There was work done by 2 or 3 universities in the United States that showed that people who could articulate their purpose had higher antibodies in their blood. And that, to me, is not surprising, but it's amazing, because what it says is that people who have purpose and who can articulate their purpose and who are demonstrating their purpose and living their purpose actually live longer lives, up to 10 years longer. So now this is not just about marketing and business. It's about the health, and not just the wealth, but the health of the world.
Wow. I mean, wow. Just give me a second to get my head over this. I mean, people are getting benefits from I know it's more like essential to have a purpose in life, but I didn't even know that there is a correlation with antibodies. That's just wow.
Oh yeah, antibodies. So and living longer, up to 10 years longer. And there's another wonderful book that I want to cite by the psychiatrist, the Viennese psychiatrist, Viktor Frankl. And Viktor Frankl wrote what I believe is the most important book, one of the most important books ever written. The book was called Man's Search for Meaning. And I'll just sum it up for you. When he was in a concentration camp, he started doing some very deep listening with his with the people around him. And he wrote this brilliant book. It's probably nearly 100 million copies sold now, where he hypothesized, purported, and then reported, and then proved that the people inside the concentration camps who could articulate their purpose lived, and the ones who had no purpose died. So this is not apocryphal, or you know, this is our history, and it's something to be learned from not just marketers, but social scientists, psychologists, neuroscientists, and the medical community, which is now really embracing this notion of purpose as the great antibody, as the great, you know, the great saving grace, a healing grace.
Wow. I know about Viktor Frankl because, well, I'm a psychologist by a bachelor's degree, and this is really linked to where I'm coming from, and seeing that it's really impacting human lives and the company lives, it's just great to hear it from you, and in such hard data. Thank you so much for sharing.
Sure, absolutely.
All right, Joey, here's another question. I was discussing it with my colleague that we are building together a website, a body of knowledge that I was talking in the email, that we are trying to inspire more companies to think about missions or purpose or like whatever they want to tell them, but the deeper meaning. We're coming to our terms right now, and the purpose seems to be the right word, but we don't have such a word in Russian. So nevertheless, we are seeing the reality of Russian business, where a lot of companies were founded in the 90s by people who were like privatizing the factories and the resources of USSR and now the Russian Federation, and they were just finding the companies to build up more money, to earn a profit. So here's my question. Does every business, especially those businesses, have a purpose? Do you believe in that? And if you do, how can we find a purpose in a business whose owner or CEO believes that it was made entirely for money?
Okay, great question. Now, the answer is simple. Those people who have created businesses to make money will make money. The question is, how much money are those businesses leaving on the table? And the answer to that is a lot. But because what we found was the companies who were started in an effort to make money, actually, there was a finite, it was a finite context, meaning they could only make so much money, and any incremental monies, which I call incrementalism, would be made. But there would be no monumental kind of revenue. The companies that employed purpose, in addition to making money, so that's money plus meaning, equaled revenues far beyond, far unimaginable. So I would say to the companies that are born to make money, God bless you and go ahead and make money. But you are leaving lots of money on the table. And if you want monumental increases versus incremental increases, you need to articulate your purpose. Because I have met very few people who have started businesses that didn't start a business to be not just another good or another service, but to actually create good and create service. So we're moving from a society, clearly a Western society, from goods and services to good and service. And that's a big shift. So again, if you want to make money, great. If you want to make a lot of money, you're going to need purpose. And by the way, to your point about Russian being the word purpose, you know, there are many words that one could use. They could use purpose. They could use what Aristotle originally thought of, because he didn't talk about purpose. He talked about having a calling. He believed that if you had a job, he believed that a job or a career were too small for human spirits. Mm-hmm. So if a job and a calling is too small for my spirit, what's left but a purpose or a calling? And then there's essence, there's DNA. Luke Skywalker from Star Wars called it the Force. It's that ineffable power that has this magical way of aligning an organization and creating radical advocacy for that organization. And if you think about it, imagine a company that was aligned around one central construct and then advocated it much greater than any other company. Well, that workforce becomes a life force. And that is the power of purpose.
Wow. I'm just, honestly, I'm just writing down some of your wordplay, and I was fascinated by it when I was reading the book. But now you're giving me this monumental increase instead of incremental increase, and workforce becomes a life force. And that's just something that I would love to just type down. Just give me a second, because it's golden.
Yeah, sure. Thank you.
Here's the question while I'm doing it. What if a company was founded by a man who wanted to earn money? Like, he was the founder, but the company is developing and new leaders are coming in, new fresh blood is drawing in into the company. Do they have a chance to maybe influence somehow upward to build up a purpose? And if they do, how can it be possible?
Yeah, great. Another great question. So when a company begins, when it gets what I call the instructive spark of fire, you know, what is it that's motivating me to build this company? That is called ethos, the beginning, the essence, the seed. Then what happens when other people, as you had mentioned, come into the organization, especially in leadership positions, they create what is called culture, because culture is really the amalgam, the summation of values. And that culture that has created those values, which is really purpose in action, that's the black box of strategy and tactics. So just to review, we begin with ethos. Other people come to the organization, they create culture, because now there's the organization is made up of shared beliefs. And those behaviors now are codified into what we call values. So ethos, culture, and values, one could imagine could be the black box of strategy. That if you know your ethos, and if you have a strong culture that is wrapped in values that tell people how to behave, because that's the difference between values and purpose. Purpose basically is a belief. It's a belief. But values are behaviors. So if you have a belief and you support that belief with specific behaviors, initiatives, actions, that is purpose in action. And if you don't do that, then the purpose becomes fairly meaningless. As I've said, purpose without participation is just paper.
Oh, that's another great one. Purpose without participation is just paper. That's perfect.
Yes.
Okay, so if I get you right, so this moment of creating ethos, the moment when the company is born, and in the moments when new people come in, they create a new culture. So for instance, maybe some man who obtained a lot of resources, he created a company to multiply his resources without a single purpose. Like his purpose was to earn money, like we discussed. And then people come to his company, and maybe they don't see the purpose of the company, but they want to work in a purposeful company. So my question would be like, is there a chance for them to stay in this company and create a place where there is a purpose, but if they are not at the top of the food chain?
Absolutely. You know, I prefer to use an example in Russian history, but let me use one in American history. And forgive me. When the 13 colonies were created that would become the United States of America, all 13 colonies had 13 different flags, 13 different mottos, 13 different leaders, and one could argue 13 different purposes. When they came together in Philadelphia, which was ignited by the work of Benjamin Franklin, those 13 colonies went into a room and came out of that room with one purpose, which was we the people. They brought down they subjugated their own flags for a greater flag. They actually created one currency, and they all were singing from one song sheet. So here we have an example of 13 different organizations, if you will, who had 13 different ways of doing things and 13 different ways or 13 ways to explain the future. But they knew that, as there was a great speech given by one of the leaders who said, if we don't hang together, we will hang separately. And that was a clarion call to get their act together and to come up with one purpose, which now we express as we the people.
Didn't even think that that this Franklin had so much influence and so much purpose in his words. This hang together and hang separately. This is a smart wordplay there, right there.
Yeah,
thank you for sharing. That's a beautiful example.
Yeah, and that wordplay wasn't mine. That was his. But it says so much. Even today, it rings true, because if a company is disparate in their march forward, then they will never be able to soldier the kind of inspiration, creativity, innovation, genuineness, and fervent and become fervent in their cause.
Right. Thank you. All right. Joey, let me just ask you some questions on, I've read one of the cases on your website, and it's just fascinated me really fascinated me. I can't even find the word right now, but it was a case for Mercedes-Benz where the purpose sounds like first move the world. Well, first of all, I love this wordplay. That's really witty and smart, and that really shows that they are the first there, and first has many meanings. And here are two questions that I would love to ask you. I see clearly that you have a process where you interview the leaders and you get to know their stories, why they're fascinated by the company and stuff like this. And here's the question. I see that in the book, you had one question dedicated to stories, which is tell me your most favorite story about the company. And all the others were more logical questions, like why do you value the company? What is special about the company? So here's my question. For Mercedes-Benz and to get the success in this project, like, is there any percentage of the use of stories, or it doesn't matter, and it's like it depends on the people, or like what they want to answer, stories or just facts and their ideas about the community?
Well, another great question. Stories are the lifeblood of an organization and the lifeblood, frankly, of human beings. We need stories to survive. We need stories to inspire and lift us up in times of difficulty. We need stories to be part, to become part of something bigger than we are ourselves. So when we ask our clients, tell us your favorite stories, they are, if they're bedtime stories, they're daytime stories. They're the stories that create a company, that create a culture, that create the values. And those stories are critically important. There is one question that we ask that's more important than tell us your favorite story. And that question, and it's a very, very profound question, and something that all your listeners should ask themselves about their companies. And that question is, if your company was gone tomorrow, what would the world lose? And it can't be, you know, financial gains. It has to be something much more humanistic. And once we understand what the world would lose, we can better articulate that story. And I'll give you just a quick little story that demonstrates the power of that question. When Akio Morita, who was the founder of Sony, had his rice factory leveled after the atomic bombs, and Japan was really, I mean, just shattered. His people came to him and said, we need to do something. We need to impact the world. We need to heal. We need to rebuild. And Akio Morita said, well, you know, we can't just make rice machines anymore. We need to be a technology company. And he was very inspired by a lot of Western companies. And he hired a bunch of consultants who came back to him with a plan, and the plan and the purpose was to make Sony the number one technology company in Japan. And after 2 days of thinking and reading this long document, he came back to his advisors and he said, I love everything that you've done and everything you've said, though I have one problem and one solution for that problem. When you told me that Sony will be the number one technology company in Japan, that was not enough. So I'd like to change that sentence to make Japan the number one technology company in the world. And when he said that, the lines grew and people wanted to be part of some greater story, some greater crusade, some greater action in the world. And to this day, the halo effect of that purpose in the 1940s is still somewhat alive. And as I say in my book, the fruits are in the roots. If you go back to the beginnings, mm-hmm. you're going to find the answer to the future.
Wow. Great. That's really a good question. And that's based on logic, but I can feel that it's really linked to how people perceive the story of their company unfolding. Thank you so much for clarifying. That's great.
Sure. And this exercise, by the way, the exercise of purpose is not just logic. It is, and I mean this in the best of all terms, it is magic. It is the combination of algebra, which is logical, and fire, which is magical. And that combination of, that combination of algebra and fire, or logic and magic, is what makes a company makes a company optimize itself along the lines of both being purposeful and profitable.
Wow. Great. That gives me an insight into how Mercedes-Benz did it, because they clearly have a long history and they clearly have a lot of events in their modern times. But this really sums it up for me. All right.
Thank you.
here's another question. I have actually two left, so we are close to wrapping it up. But here's one. What's the most productive way, in your opinion, to for people to start believing and acting on their purpose after the purpose is written and the films are rolled out and, you know, after your part of the work is done? How can a company engage their people to believe and act on purpose?
Another great question. And it goes back to my statement about purpose without participation is just paper.
That's exactly where I took it from. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Well, if the leadership understands that truth, then they will deploy certain actions and certain programs that brings the individual's purpose into the company purpose. Because that's really, you know, if we're going to have vibrant companies in the future, we need the talent to support those vibrant companies. But the talent, as you and I both have pointed out, are not just coming for money, they're coming for meaning. So a dialogue about meaning and a town halls about meaning and questions about meaning become all the more important. You know, the company Whole Foods, their original founder, the CEO, John Mackey, when his purpose was identified and articulated, he wrote something called the Declaration of Interdependence. Not the Declaration of Independence, but interdependence. And what he said was that one of the stakeholders in his company are not just the people, not just the customers, not just his vendors, but the planet itself. And that became the mantra that actually equalized the planet with the people. And to this day, and now, of course, Whole Foods has been bought, but to this day, Whole Foods, I think, is it's a supermarket of purpose. And just to give you a funny little story, a couple weeks ago, I was in a grocery store, not Whole Foods, but there in the pea section where they had peas and carrots, the sign next to the peas said, "Peas with purpose." And I thought that was very funny. Certainly the yes. final impact of all this work being done over the last quarter century.
Yeah, peas with purpose is like the micro level of the work they were doing. That's a great example.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great document, but can you give me another insight about like not the top leader, not the CEO, like, or maybe let me pose it this way. What's the key thing for a leader to make such a dialogue about the sense, the meaning? Like, what's the key influence point, like the key idea that a leader needs to hold to do it successfully?
A contribution to society. So one, a leader must have a social contract with all their stakeholders. And this is a major shift, again, because under Jack Welch, God rest his soul, and GE, it was all about shareholder focus, which was ignited by the economist Milton Friedman in the 1970s, who said the sole purpose of a corporation is to make money for their shareholders. Today, we have evolved from a shareholder society or shareholder organization to a stakeholder organization, where your stakeholders are much greater than just the shareholders. And if they are to make an impact, they make it through contribution. And this is an important point I want to make. Somebody once asked me, well, what's the alchemy? What are the two or three biggest things that make up a purpose? And I said, there are only two. There's intention, okay? Intention. So I have a great intention. Mm-hmm. And then there's contribution. And what I've found over the last quarter century are companies that may have made, have great intentions and they speak great language and they give great talks, but they've made very little contribution to society. They don't have a social contract with society. Then there are the companies that actually make great contributions. They contribute money to countries or to efforts or to NGOs, and they make these contributions, but they're not out of intention, but out of compliance. So the bottom line there is, if you have a company that has great intention, but no contribution, you are impotent. You're an impotent company. If you have a company that makes contributions but has no intention, you're a blind company. But if you're a company that has both intention and contribution, you are a purposeful company, and your purpose is being felt in actions every single day that improve society, our lot, and our lot in the world.
Wow, that's another great 2x2 matrix right there with the contribution and intention. That's really clears it up for me.
Right.
Thank you so much. Okay, Joey, one final question for me, and here it is. I know that the US market and the European market is way better developed in terms of values and mission statements and such, you know, human part of the business, I would say. But here's the deal. I want to know an insight from you, like what it is with the US market. What is your current challenge? Like, what is your market throwing at you? Because you have a lot of culture with a lot of companies with great culture. What's the most challenging part right now for you? Why is Brighthouse still needed?
Well, great last question, which takes me to the future of business and marketing and film. 3 years ago, I sold Brighthouse to the Boston Consulting Group and stayed on as a fellow for the BCG. I then opened a new company, which is now just 18 months old, called Brand New World Studios. And what Brand New World Studios does is they make motion pictures, the kind of films you see on Netflix or in theaters, based on a company's purpose. Because my biggest challenge after the 25 years of work that I did was taking what was an internal operation or internal effort and then externalizing it, because the communication piece just wasn't working. Advertising was not wasn't good enough anymore. And marketing people, including many of the MBAs that I teach, were being classically trained for a world that didn't exist. So I hypothesized that now companies would become the new executive producers, that the Fortune 500 companies would be the new Hollywood producers that would make films about purpose, not about their company, but about the purpose of their company, and align that purpose with the film. And we're in two major productions right now with two very large companies, one making a documentary about their purpose and another making a feature film based on their purpose, but a thriller. It's thrilling, it's adventurous, it's a love story. And I think this is the future, by the way, as the industries of entertainment and marketing collapse into one chrysalis, just like a chrysalis where a caterpillar goes into a cocoon and then creates imaginary cells, out comes a butterfly. This is the butterfly that's going to be flying in the near future.
Wow. That's really valuable, and I would love to see your works. I mean, can I access some of those films on your website, maybe? Can you give me some
comments? Yeah. You can access them through me. You know, you can write to me, and your and I welcome your listeners to write to me. My email address, which I'm good with receiving, I get lots of emails every day, is Joey, J-O-E-Y, at brand, B-R-A-N-D, newworldstudios.com. Joey at brandnewworldstudios.com. And I'd be happy to share films with you. And a lot of them are under wraps because this is a brand new way for a brand new world to communicate. But there are some pieces I can share with you.
So much. I mean, I would really love to see your work, and I invite all of you folks to join in and go to the email address that Joey sent and experience it, because that's really a deep and meaningful work you're doing. And I thank you so much for coming here today and sharing your knowledge. I feel enriched, and I think that our audience is also feeling this the same way. Thank you so much for your impact.
Thank you. It was an honor. You're a great interviewer. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you so much.
It was fabulous. Thank you.
All right, folks, this is it for tonight's episode of Dusha Podcast. We hope you had a great time listening to us and learned a lot about driving a purposeful business and leading a more purposeful life and business. Thank you all for listening and stay safe in these uncertain times. See you in our next episode.